It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and let's meet the detectorists. The first patent for a portable metal detector was handed out 99 years ago, but in the last handful of years, we've seen an increase in the sale of metal detectors, as well as dozens of clubs across the Midwest that have turned the hobby of metal detecting into a growing community of detectorists. What are they looking for? And what do they find? 800-642-1234 to join our conversation this hour. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org anytime. Our guest this morning, Rob Rizzo, is the history digger. He travels the state with his metal detector, finding homeowners who want their old property searched for historical objects or lost items. Rob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Lee, thank you so much. It is a pleasure to join you in the audience today and talk about metal detecting.
I'm very excited about this. Also joining us, Jim Winter, known as the Driftless Digger, and has been metal detecting as a hobby since 2019. He gives educational talks on the subject across the state. Jim, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm glad to share the stage with Rob.
You bet. And let me start with you, Jim. What got you down the path of metal detecting? What got you started, and what kept you going?
Sure. So when I was a kid, I begged and begged and begged my parents for a metal detector. And finally, at the age of 16, they got me one, a cheap kid's metal detector. And I used it for about a year. Found some stuff in my yard. I was really excited by it. But then life got in the way. High school continued, girls, college. So I didn't really metal detect anymore, but I kept that child's metal detector. And throughout my moves, I kept it with me. And then in 2019, I was cleaning out my garage and saw that metal detector sitting there. And the wires connecting the battery to the detector were frayed. And so I couldn't use it anymore. And I kind of had an epiphany moment. I was like, you know what? That one year I used it as a kid, I really liked doing it. Why not do it again? So I went out in 2019 and purchased my first professional grade metal detector and have been doing it ever since.
And I can get the sense of the contagion there as a kid getting a metal detector and going out into your own yard and finding things that were just beneath your feet that you never knew were there would be like opening up an entire world that was, you know, just hiding right underneath the dirt.
Yep.
Rob, what got you started down the path of digging?
Well, you know, when I was a small child, my grandmother, Grandma Rizzo, owned and operated an antique store. And surprisingly, she let her grandchildren like roam free among all these different mysterious artifacts and treasures. And that kind of sparked my interest, I will say, in history. Mm-hmm. Okay. And at the same time, I also realized I liked science fiction and time travel. And for me, you know, I share some of the same things that Jim enjoys, but this kind of combines two of my passions, because metal detecting helps us connect to, you know, things in the past that we can bring back to the present and share and preserve, tell the stories about these historical items for future generations. So it was, you know, a few years before I retired, my children had heard me talk about this passion for so long that they purchased for me my first metal detector. And let me tell you, once you find that first cool, interesting item, you are hooked. So I've been enjoying it ever since.
What was that first cool item for you, Rob?
Well, surprisingly, I was on a beach in Waukesha County in Oconomowoc, you know, very public beach. I am pretty confident it had been metal detected many, many times before. But very close to an old lifeguard chair, I found a silver Mercury dime and a beautiful coin, U.S. coin. And the fact that I actually could find something of age, I was like, what else is out there? Let me loose and have at it.
There's a lot of grains of sand out there that need to be dug through to find out what's underneath. Jim, was there an item that you discovered early on that was like, I want to know what else is under there?
Yes, there was. One of my first properties I detected was a friend's one-room schoolhouse that he had converted into a house just outside of Platteville, Wisconsin. And I took my detector there. And one of the first things I found was a church key can opener. And so one end is a can opener, more for metal cans, not for beer cans and such. But then the other end had a couple holes on it, like a key would. And one of those holes fit the screws of headlights of early Model Ts and other early cars that you could could, it was a tool you could use to loosen the headlamps on them. So when I found that and did the research, and to me, research is just as much fun as finding the item and knew what that was, I was hooked. And was like, there's a whole world of possibilities, like you mentioned, Lee, out there. You never know what you're going to find coming out of the ground. And so that's the fascination, the curiosity for me.
But as you mentioned, Jim, when you pulled it out of the ground, it's not like you immediately knew what this was. You had to go on the path to figure out what you'd uncovered.
Right.
How common is that?
Pretty common. A lot of metal detectorists, I know Rob does too, we research our finds because we want to tell the story of what that find is and maybe the context of where we found it and what it means and when it was used and educate people. And I'm a history nerd like Rob as well. And so educating myself about something can only help me going forward as I continue metal detecting, that next time I find it or somebody asks, what is this, I can tell them. So it's important to do the research in the background.
So not just detectorists, but historians, storytellers, and giving us a tie back to our past that was lying just beneath our feet all along. We're talking about metal detecting with two veteran Wisconsin-based detectorists, Jim Winter, known as the Driftless Digger, and Rob Rizzo, the History Digger. And I bet you've got a story or two to tell about detectoring, where you are and what the metal detector dug up in your experience at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Where we go to Elizabeth in Verona. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning. My father-in-law owns some land up in Washburn, Wisconsin. This land used to be a field and have some homes on it. We metal detect together when we're up there. Mm. We were able to find a metal Social Security card. When we pulled it out of the ground and wiped the mud off, it was still completely legible. You could see the name and the Social Security card number, the decorative piece where it looked just like a Social Security card, but metal. We did our research, and it turns out it was the old landowner who probably it fell out of his pocket or his wallet while he was working the land or at his home.
Do you know about what year this card would have been issued? I didn't even know they made metal Social Security cards.
No, we looked it up. They didn't officially make it. It looks like you could have purchased it yourself if you worked in a hard labor and you were afraid that your Social Security card would get ruined in your wallet or something. But I believe it was the early 1900s. And I wish I could remember more, but unfortunately I can't.
Oh, that's a great story, though, Elizabeth, and I thank you for sharing it. Let me see here. Rob, have you ever come across a metal Social Security card before?
No, that one is still on my bucket list, but it's a great example of, there's so many unique items. You probably can imagine. Yes, we find a lot of coins and the things that people might have carried in their pockets, that kind of thing. But, Jim touched upon something, and you did too, Lee, you used the word community. Mm-hmm. It's so nice because when you do find something, we have several groups we can post these items to and basically say, hey, what is this? Can anybody help me? But the research doesn't just occur after the find. Part of the fun is also researching the property prior to even going there. There's certain things available in public libraries, plot maps. There's a website called historicalaerials.com that contains aerial photos. Some cases back to the 1930s, if you could believe that, that show what buildings at that time were on the land. And if something was there in 1930, it might have been built before the turn of the century. So there's a lot of things, before and after the actual event of swinging a metal detector over the ground that, help us enjoy this community and help us enjoy the research and help us eventually package all of this into wonderful, exciting, informative stories.
Yeah, it's just the metal detecting that we all get to see and wonder what it is that they're finding there. And then once you start expanding on that, you realize that they're finding our history, our shared history, and in some cases, some very personal history as well. It's Rob Rizzo, the history digger, traveling the state with his metal detector, finding homeowners who want their old properties searched for historical objects or lost items. Also joining us, Jim Winter, the driftless digger, who's been metal detecting as a hobby since 2019. And your questions and comments and stories about metal detecting when we continue at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're digging in the dirt with two Wisconsin detectorists. And we're learning more about the hobby of metal detecting and the community it creates with our guests, the history digger Rob Rizzo and the driftless digger Jim Winter, both veteran detectorists in Wisconsin. We invite you to our conversation with your questions or stories. 800-642-1234. What did you find when you started digging? 800-642-1234. And Jim Winter, for people who have never picked up a metal detector before, what's your best advice for getting started?
A lot of metal detectorists, when they start, they want to go, they'll go to Radio Shack or Walmart or Bass Pro Shops and pick up a really cheap $100, $150 metal detector. And I recommend people do not do that because those really cheap metal detectors will only make one sound no matter what metal you go over. They won't tell you how deep it is. They won't give you any indication or information as to what you're finding. And when people who are beginning use those metal detectors, they get frustrated real fast because they find a lot of bottle caps and pull tabs and nails. So I always recommend investing a little bit more money. You can buy a really good metal detector for $200-$300 that will differentiate tones based on what metal you're finding and will tell you depth, and you'll have a little more success in what you're finding and a little less frustration. But even the people who've been doing it for a long time, like Rob and I, we still find a lot of trash when we go out metal detecting. It's not always finding all the treasure. You have to find the trash to find the treasure. But that's the one thing I'd recommend is invest a little bit more in that first metal detector, and you're not going to get frustrated as easily.
Let's go back to the phones now at 800-642-1234. Zeke and Bowler, good morning.
Good morning. A quick story about some friends who told me that grandmother had thrown her wedding ring out in the dish with the dishwater out the back door.
Oh, dear.
I went there three times, and then the third time I finally found it. She must have had one heck of a good arm because that ring was 35 feet from the back door. And
oh, wow.
It was in 3.5 inches of soil, so there must have been some landscaping done there, because I kept checking closer to the door, and I cleaned it out. I couldn't find anything else.
Are you
do you do
metal detecting regularly? Yeah. Zeke,
I've been doing it for probably 30 years. Oh. But I encourage anybody who detects to please carefully fill their holes in so it looks like nothing was ever done, because that is one thing that discourages people from doing it. Not people, but
sure,
communities that allow you to do it, because they come across these holes, it looks like a skunk has been there digging up the whole yard.
I had not even considered that, Zeke, and I thank you for the call. And it is about, I guess, the best practices of being a digger and a detectorist. Rob Rizzo, the history digger, how do you go about making sure that you are protecting the spaces that you are searching?
Well, there's two things that kind of tie together. In addition to what Jim said as far as a recommendation, the other thing we often, encourage people to do is join a club or metal detect with somebody else who's been doing it for a while, because they will, they'll not only teach you the ropes about the machine, but also help educate you about what we refer to as metal detecting etiquette. There's some very clear do's and don'ts with regard to, we never trespass. We should always, as Zeke said, fill our holes. It's really important to get permission on the property, to be respectful if anybody comes up, to ask you what you're doing. So, there's a good understanding in the community that we want to keep this hobby and preserve it for future generations as well. And as the hobby grows. You know, I mean, it's just important to do that, to be respectful. But he absolutely brings up a great point.
Jim, what would be the proper etiquette when you would go to a person's home, private property, and bring your metal detector?
Oh well, I'm blessed enough that I don't usually have to door knock to try cold call, as you would, to try and seek permissions. I have people come to me asking me to come out to their property, but on the rare occasions I do have to go and door knock, or I want to door knock, I simply knock on the door and wait for them to answer, and I explain who I am and what I do, that I save history through metal detecting. I don't do it to make money. I explain to them that I am not going to damage their yard. Like Rob mentioned, I'm going to fill in your hole. And my goal, once I'm gone, is to leave no trace, that you're not going to be able to tell I was here. I let them know that I take all trash I find with me. I don't leave it in the ground or on top of the ground. And to me, Rob mentioned the etiquette and the code of ethics that a lot of metal detectorists follow, and one of those items is, for me, I always give the property owner first right of refusal to what I find. So that's a conversation we have at the beginning, if they do allow me permission, is we will talk about, okay, do you want to see everything I find either before I leave today, or I'll go home and clean everything up, send you a photo, and then you tell me you want to keep A, B, and C. Or do you not care to keep anything and you just want to see it and I get to take it all home? And in some instances, the property owner will say at the beginning, I just want to keep any toys you find, or I want to keep any jewelry you find. And then I have those expectations of mine managed when I start that permission, that I know, okay, I'm going to have to show the property owner everything, or they only want certain things, or I get to keep it all. So very important to cover all those things at the beginning of the permission.
Yeah, and Rob, you often metal detect on private property. What are your tips to gaining permission from homeowners?
Well, I think the most important thing is to establish some type of trust, you know, and I have a variety of ways I engage or contact with my property owners. But like Jim said, you know, I share with them, I do this for the love of history. I give them the option of keeping, you know, all of their finds, sharing them. That's totally up to them. I do also offer, you know, the opportunity, if they give me permission, to make a small video about the actual event and the items I find, and I tell the story about the historical relevance of the items, that type of thing. What's most important is that you just have a shared understanding of why you're doing this, what will happen with the items to move forward. But the trust is an important one. You know, who are you? You know, are you going to damage my property and that type of thing? And in a very few occasions, I've had the property owner request that I sign a, you know, a liability waiver. You know, oh my gosh, if in the event something were to happen, you know, I, you know, release them. But happily, you know, happy to do that. But I've only had to do that a few times.
That is Rob Rizzo, the History Digger, also joining us for the hour. Jim Winter, the Driftless Digger, and you as well at 1-800-642-1234. Stephen in Madison, good morning.
Hi, I was recently in California, and somebody said that they had a gold detector, and I was curious monetarily wise, if people want to do it for money, how possible it is, and what type of things do you find that are the most valuable? Is there a gold detector, and what type of detectors are there? I'm curious into the lightest detector that's available, despite the price, that you know of, that is, you know, can pick up these type of things if possible, for a monetary reason. And I'll listen. Thank you.
Yeah, Jim, what types of metal detectors out there, and is there one that can pick up gold for me?
There is a lot of metal detectors. Well, all metal detectors pick up metal, but there are some metal detectors that either have a gold program on them. The Equinox 800 and 900, I have the 800. The Mine Lab Manticore has a gold program on it. I have that machine as well. Garrett makes some metal detectors that have gold programs, but there are some metal detectors that are specifically made to find gold. Those are a little more expensive. But yeah, you can find gold just like any other metal with a metal detector.
And Rob, can you make money as a digger? Is there money to be made by scouring the land for hidden gold?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a common meme that's often circulated in the metal detecting community. It's a picture of a father handing his young son his first metal detector. And the boy asks his father, he says, "Dad, can you become a millionaire metal detecting? And the father says, yes, you can, son, if you start as a billionaire. And we laugh at that. I mean, there are some people, especially people who metal detect around beaches, who often will find gold rings and, you know, and I'm sure they convert that into cash. But, you know, most of us do it for other reasons, you know, than that. It's for the enjoyment. And I will just add also to what Jim said, he's absolutely right. There are, you know, almost all of these detectors will, you know, locate and identify gold. However, the more expensive ones are targeted on very small gold nuggets. Oh. And, you know, those can, you know, be, you know, as much as like $10,000, but even for just a few hundred dollars, some of those machines will find gold. And they do. The caller was very astute. They do vary in terms of weight. The lightest metal detector on the market at the moment is produced by a company out of France, and it is called the XP Deus 2. Very light, easy to swing, very comfortable.
Rob Rizzo joining us along with Jim Winter, two diggers who are detectorists, and we're taking a look at the community that metal detecting has built around our state. 800-642-1234 for your stories. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And way back in 1881, Alexander Graham Bell used one of his own inventions to try to save the life of President James Garfield. Garfield had been shot in the back, and Bell was trying to locate the bullet in the president's body using a metal detector. Sadly, the metal springs in President Garfield's bed made Bell's new invention useless, and Garfield would eventually die from a related infection. Now, according to metaldetector.com, this is the first known use of a metal detector in history. Detectorists have come a long way since Alexander Graham Bell. And our guest this hour, Rob Rizzo, is the history digger who travels Wisconsin with his metal detector, finding homeowners who want their old property searched for historical objects or lost items. And Jim Winter, who's known as the driftless digger and has been metal detecting as a hobby since 2019. We invite you to our conversation this hour about the community that the seemingly solitary act of metal detecting can create at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to the phones now, where Tom in Madison is standing by. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. I was just wondering if they search for Native American things like arrowheads and other items like that, or items like, I don't know if they can pick up bones, though, like a burials or anything like that with a detector. And then is there anything that they have to report if they found some artifacts like that to the tribes, or who owns that? If you find stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom, and I'm glad you asked it. And I'd be interested in the answer from both of our guests. Jim Winter, the driftless digger, I'll start with you. Any Native American artifacts? And if so, what do you do once they are found?
I have never had the pleasure of going hunting for Native American artifacts. If they're made out of metal, you can pick them up, but arrowheads and flints, you cannot. But I do bottle digging as well. That's something, another part of the hobby that I enjoy. And again, that's not something that metal detectors will pick up, but you locate old dumps, do the research, and dig for bottles that way. And as far as when you find something archaeologically significant, each municipality has laws regarding metal detecting, and those are usually outlined in those laws. If you find something architecturally significant or archaeologically significant, you need to report it. But it varies depending on the municipality.
Yeah. And Rob, what about for you? Have you uncovered any Native American artifacts?
Yes, I have actually. So what's interesting about Tom's question, you know, especially where we live, upper Michigan, some portions of Wisconsin, there's a lot of what's called float copper. And the indigenous tribes, of course, realized that, you know, at some point that they could, you know, heat these elements and forge them into useful tools and even weapons. And I had an opportunity last fall. I was detecting with a good friend who came across a copper spear point that was dated all the way back. In fact, the Milwaukee Public Museum helped him date it to what's called the Archaic Period. And Lee, if you could believe this or not, this thing was over 8,000 years old.
Ooh.
So we will, you'll find things like that. You will find awls. And sometimes the way they're able to date these is they actually hold the remnants of old pieces of wood that, you know, they can carbon date that. But I happened to be in North Carolina one time, not Wisconsin. It was metal detecting. And metal detectors will not pick up bone. But, and, you know, any type of metal, ferrous or non-ferrous, you'll find. But I did come across a quartz arrowhead that was just in a cotton field. And the farmer had recently come through with his plow and brought it up to the ground. And, you know, and in that particular location, it was private property. We were actually allowed to, you know, pick up and keep that. But it absolutely is key that, and this kind of goes back to those code of ethics, the laws vary greatly. You know, for example, in Wisconsin, there's no metal detecting whatsoever in state parks. Okay. In Michigan, however, you know, certain state parks and beaches, it's permissible. So, yeah, but primarily these will find metal, but because you're out there searching, you may come across glass bottles, or you may come across, you know, other items such as, you know, yeah, we would call, often they're called Indian arrowheads, but the truth is more often they were actually the tips of spears, not what we would know as, you know, an arrow with a traditional bow and arrow.
And Rob, you've also gone to the UK to metal detect. What's different in that experience when you take your hobby overseas?
Well, the land there is much older. And has, you know, has had generations upon generations, you know, dating back to the, you know, Celtic tribes, for example, or Romans that might have, you know, invaded and occupied parts of the United Kingdom, and then later the Saxons and so on. So just number one, the type of items that you find and the age range, the depth, absolutely fascinating. I was blessed on my very first trip over there to find a what's called a hammered gold coin. And it was from the year either 1604 or 5. They don't, you know, at that time they didn't put the dates on the coins, but they knew when it was minted. And on the front of the coin was a profile of King James I, who, interestingly, commissioned the writing of the King James Bible. And also Jamestown was named after King James. But, oh, my goodness, it's just incredible. If for any of our listeners who are interested, I'll tell you, there's a British TV show that's wonderful to watch. It introduces them to the hobby, but it's called
The Detectorists.
Starring
Toby Jones. I am familiar.
You're familiar. It's a wonderful show.
It really is a sweet show. And it really made me wonder about the community of detectorists. And we've got that community here in our backyard with our guest this hour. Rob Rizzo is the history digger who you heard there. And also Jim Winter joining us, the driftless digger. And we hope you'll join us as well. At 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or emails available, ideas@wpr.org. I've got a question from Elma here, Rob. And Elma says, actually, Jim, I'll ask this of you. Elma says there were recently in a local conservation park where someone was using a metal detector and they found it disturbing. Have you heard this from others, Jim?
That metal detecting, they get upset by it?
Disturbed by it, or, you know, it's a conservation area and somebody is there overturning the land or at least digging into it.
Sure. Well, yeah, there have been times where I've been out metal detecting and I've had people get upset or ask me what I'm doing. And that's part of the whole going back to making sure you have permission to be there. I let them know right away, I'm here. I have permission to be here. I'm not going to damage the ground. I'm going to leave it as is. So you know, I appreciate people are concerned and care about the land and can sometimes ask questions or raise concerns, but I'm very quick to let them know I'm here with permission. I'm doing this to save history and I'm not coming in here to take everything out of the ground and steal it or sell it or things like that. And that kind of goes back to the the term, I used to use the term treasure hunter, and that was something common in the hobby is, what do you do? Oh, I'm a treasure hunter. I don't like that term anymore. I call myself a history saver because to me, a treasure hunter implies that I'm going somewhere. I'm going to dig everything out of the ground and take it with me. And I just didn't like the way that felt or landed. So I use the term history saver now, and that usually resonates a little better with people when you tell them what you're doing.
Are there rules of etiquette among metal detectors, detectorists? And I think there's actually an episode of the Detectorists from the BBC that's all about this. What are the rules, Jim, of etiquette among other metal detectorists?
Well, if you're going out with other people, if somebody invites you to their permission, you always respect what they are following and what their relationship is with the property owner. Whether that's what you keep and don't keep, revealing the location, you never reveal the location of where you're going if another detectorist is inviting you there, or in a very limited way, you make sure that the detectorist who has that permission is okay with what you're going to share. You always follow their rules and what they're doing there, and you'll be fine.
Let's go back to your questions and comments now. Your story is about metal detecting at 800-642-1234, where Richard in Bayview is standing by. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering what legal basis a municipality would have for if you find something on your property.
So if you find something on your property with a metal detector, why would a municipality have any right to it? Is that... I think that's a fair question, Richard. And Jim, what about your are there rules about who gets what when you dig it up? And are those rules based by a municipality in Wisconsin?
If you're on private property, someone's home, which Rob and I both do a lot, that is that person's private property. Whatever is found on that person's private property is either belongs to that person who owns that property, or if they don't want it, you can take it with you. Public property, a little different, and that kind of goes into municipalities have different rules for metal detecting on public property. And a perfect example is Platteville, Wisconsin, where I lived, and I recently moved to Beloit, Wisconsin. Those municipalities allow metal detecting on any public parks without any issue. You don't need a permit. I lived in Dubuque, Iowa for a while, and that municipality, you had to have a permit every month, and you could only apply to metal detecting two parks a month, and you had to carry that permit with you. And then my hometown of Decatur, Illinois, has outlawed metal detecting in all public parks, period. So the laws regarding detecting really vary by municipality. So it's very important for somebody who's getting into the hobby to make sure they check with where they live to what their metal detecting rules are.
Jim Winter, the Driftless Digger, joining us, as well as Rob Rizzo, the History Digger, and hopefully you before we're done at 1-800-642-1234. The sense of history we find just beneath our feet when we start digging, the sense of community that comes from trying to figure out what it is you just found beneath your feet, and the growing community of metal detectorists across Wisconsin and the clubs and communities that are growing out of it. We invite you to the conversation, 800-642-1234. Also have an email here from ideas@wpr.org, which is available to you anytime. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and who knows what lies just beneath our feet? Detectorists do, but they're not just unearthing bits of old and lost metal, they're uncovering pieces of our history, both shared and sometimes very personal. We have the History Digger Rob Rizzo and the Driftless Digger Jim Winter joining us, and we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. And Rob, I've got an email here from Robert who simply asks, what's your ratio of trash to treasure?
Oh, what a great question. And it's so important not to give the wrong impression because, I've never mathematically calculated it, but we pull up so many trash items. These could be pull tabs, bottle caps, tin foil, left on the ground, sadly. And in a bit of irony, as Jim mentioned, some of the more advanced metal detectors, they emit a different sound if you're passing your coil over top of iron versus, let's say, silver or gold. But the sound for gold and the number on the machine is absolutely, in many cases, the exact same sound as the pull tab, sadly. So if you want to find, you know, a gold ring or a gold coin, you are going to dig up quite a few pull tabs. I was blessed. I have a good friend, Bruce Rutkowski. He's known as the Bruce in the metal detecting community. He invited me onto a permission in mid-December before the ground froze in Wisconsin. And he was called by a woman who, her sister had attended a family event that summer. And sadly, she lost a gold ring that her father had given to her, you know, and it was a memento at this point. And thankfully, it was a private yard versus a park, so there wasn't as much trash. I was using a different metal detector at the time called the Minelab Manticore. And as luck, maybe a little bit of skill would have it, I found it within 20 minutes. We reunited the ring with, you know, its owner, who lived in California, by the way. And she wanted to pay us, which we, of course, declined and refused. But she ended up making a donation to the Tunnel to Towers project. It's a charity I support through my YouTube channel. And I'll just end this little story by saying, you know, sometimes it's about the find or the history, the story. In that case, we were able to, you know, make someone very happy and reunite them with something that they thought they had lost forever.
And there's a similar story that you have out of Chilton where you found a class ring, but not just the class ring. You found the family behind this class ring, Rob.
Well, oh, yes. And this one is a story still in progress. So
really?
This was, yes, this is an older property that I'll just say had, I want to kind of keep the location somewhat private on behalf of the property owner, but let me just say had been metal detected previously. And despite that, found this ring. It was pretty evident it was a ring right away. It was probably about 4 or 5 inches down. I cleaned it off, and it was a beautiful clasped ring, kind of an Art Deco style, and you could make out the year 1946. And thankfully, there were three initials inscribed, you know, inside the wedding band. And Chilton back then, the high school wasn't that large. Mm-hmm. Went online, did some research. Many of us also do genealogy research and so on. Found the digitized yearbook and quickly identified who this ring belonged to. Now, sadly, that woman has passed. However, the property owner and I have identified five of her children. And in a few weeks, we will be contacting them. We're not going to tell them exactly what we found, but we're going to surprise them with what it is. But and it's going to be a joy to, you know, return them with something that belonged to their mother or their grandmother.
That is so much more than just a ring, Rob.
Yeah, indeed. And it, that's the part, again, there's so much more than just metal detecting. And I just want to give a nod to Jim, too, because one of the things that Jim does, I think, is so nice. He does so much more of this than I do. But he is quite an active speaker and educator, and he's connecting so many people with this hobby and all these the stories behind these items. And that's part of that community, Lee, that you were mentioning and talking about earlier.
Jim, so you get this question all the time, I imagine. What is your favorite find?
Well, my favorite find came last year, and it was very similar to the story Rob just shared. I was metal detecting an old church in Arthur, Wisconsin, which is just a little hamlet north of Platteville. And about 3 inches underneath a tree root, I found a 10-karat gold class ring. And it was from Platteville High School, class of 1973. Similar to Rob's ring that he found, it had initials MEV on the inside of that ring. And I knew immediately that my mission was to try and return that ring to the man who had lost it. So I went to the Platteville Public Library, looked up the yearbook, and there was only one one young man from the class of 1973 that had the initials MV. His name was Michael Vaca. And so upon doing some internet research, I discovered that Michael actually died in a car accident in 2006. So unfortunately, I wasn't going to be able to get the ring back to him. But I contacted the city editor of the Wisconsin State Journal and asked to see the entire obit. And it listed his family, his widow, and his children in that obituary. So I actually reached out to the widow via Facebook Messenger and to the son, same way, mm-hmm. and just said, hey, I think I may have found something that belonged to your late husband and your dad. I would like to talk to you about it, and didn't hear back, which is not uncommon on Facebook Messenger. And so the widow lived at the same house that she lived in back then. So actually one day I just took it upon myself to show up at her front door. Introduced myself, let them know who I was. And I said, I think I have something that belonged to your late husband, and showed her the ring. And I was able to return it to the family. But the story doesn't stop there. The grandson of Michael Vaca and Denise Vaca had an interest in metal detecting. So we went out to the widow's house, and I went around metal detecting with him for a little bit. He got to use my metal detector, gave him some tips and tricks. And this past Christmas, they actually purchased a metal detector from me. And now Michael Vaca's grandson is into metal detecting and is loving it. And hopefully someday he will help somebody recover a class, you know, find a class ring or something else and return it to a family. So that hobby is living on in that way.
That's wonderful, but it does make me start wondering about what's happening with all these class rings. Where are they going? 800-642-1234. With the time we have left, we go to Tom in Madison. Tom, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Interesting show. Thanks, gentlemen. I'm in the blizzard up here in Alaska right now. Anyway, my brother was really into it. My oldest brother, Art, he was a fire officer in Madison before he retired. And he and several others, if I remember the story correctly, paid a really kind of a what seems like a heavy sum. They ponied up $40,000, 10 grand each, to pick some land that was about 2 miles away from Gettysburg that had never been detected.
Oh.
And I wonder if that's common in historical important areas for neighboring properties to kind of lease out or sell out their rights. Or, but I can recall that he came back with buckets full of stuff. I mean, buckets full of stuff. And I didn't see it all. I saw some of it. And I know that some of the pieces that I saw really pulled at you. I mean, this was a super historic and bloody battle in our nation's history. And I'm not sure that personal choice, I would have picked up everything that he got, but sure. My motivations would have been different. I mean, I don't know. I'm not into the sport, not into the hobby. So
sure, but
there were things that kind of brought a little, you know, choke in your throat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure I would have brought some of those things.
Interesting.
You know?
But it put you there. It took you there. I mean, that was the power of those finds. We are just about out of time, but if you had a bucket list that for a place that you'd like to go metal detect, Rob, where would it be?
Well, that's a great question. So actually this May, I am metal detecting a property adjacent to the Manassas battlefield in Virginia. And so I am looking forward to that. And it's, you know, battlefields, national battlefields. So that is very much hallowed ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, many of us do this so that we, you know, we remember history, we can preserve it. And these items will tell the stories, you know, to future generations. But there is so much history all around us. And it's just, and this hobby is wonderful because it helps introduce us to not only artifacts, the story about why and how they got there. I have a bucket list, Lee, that we would have to save for another show.
We will, because we're out of time, Rob. Yes. I want to thank you both for joining us this morning. Rob Rizzo is the history digger who you heard there. Travels the state with his metal detector, finding homeowners who want their older properties searched for historical objects or lost items. And Jim Winter, known as the drift list digger, who's been metal detecting as a hobby since 2019. We appreciate all your calls and comments as well this morning. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.